Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Tim Wilson of the Wilson Firm for the appellant Denver Garrison. I'd like to introduce Mr. Garrison, who is seated in the gallery to my left. This case comes before this court as an appeal from the decision of the Court of Chancery. The issue on appeal is the lower court's reliance on an interpretation of Title 14 of the Delaware Administrative Code that was provided by Mary Ellen Kotz of the Delaware Department of Education. We contend that the lower court's reliance on her interpretation of the code was an error because that interpretation is clearly erroneous. Specifically at issue is the portion of the code that sets forth limitations of a school district on mentoring activities that may be required of an experienced teacher in its employ. Although there are other titles or other provisions of Title 14 that are tangentially related to the case, the primary provision is set forth at Title 14, Section 1503-4.4. And even more specifically, it's the construction of the term experienced teacher on an initial license that's contained in that provision. I plan to discuss four topics with the court. First is the main issue, whether the lower court relied upon a clearly erroneous interpretation of the mentoring section of the code as provided by Ms. Kotz. Number two, how the plain meaning should control on this court's review. Number three, if the court rejects the plain meaning construction, how the provisions of the code point to a construction of the term of experienced teacher on initial license as meaning a teacher with 1 year of teaching experience on an initial license for purposes of the mentoring regulation of the code. And the last issue is whether fairness demands that Ms. Kotz's affidavits and the accompanying guidance document attached thereto be disregarded.
And before you begin, what, if any, relevance does this participation agreement that your client signed at the very beginning of his tenure have to do with the case? Because, you know, looking at the agreement, looking at the deposition, it appears that he started his tenure with the understanding that the interpretation that ultimately prevailed was going to be the operative interpretation.
Well, he had no choice. It was a provision of his employment. He did object and has contended all along that he shouldn't be subjected to the full four-cycle mentoring requirements that's set forth at subsection 3.0.
No, I understand. And early on, someone said words to the effect, your objection's overruled, you're a new teacher, you have to comply. And it appears that he did. Isn't that correct?
That he did sign the document?
And he did move forward after his objection was overruled. I mean, was there any recourse to pursue that? Because there seems to be a correlation between saying, that doesn't apply to me, and they say, yes, it does apply to you. Then you sign the agreement that says it does apply to you, and for a period of years, comply with that interpretation, and then at the end say, well, you know, the entire factual predicate for what happened to me was erroneous from the beginning, notwithstanding the fact I signed the agreement, notwithstanding the fact I tried to comply for a couple of years. We need to start all over again and interpret this agreement.
Well, he did attempt to comply, and as is stated in our in the facts of this case, for the first 2 years he did get everything done, and then in the third year, he was required, as a theater teacher, he's required to put on a production in the spring of every year.
But is there a process if the school district says, you have to do this, and the new hire says, no, I don't, because I satisfy the other criteria. Is there a process with DOE to appeal that or to somehow raise that issue before DOE at the outset?
As to my knowledge, there is no process in place for that. But if you would like me to submit a supplemental memorandum on that, I would be happy to do that.
Well, we'll see. Go ahead.
Okay. The first issue is the lower court's reliance on Ms. Kotz's interpretation of the mentoring section of the code. Both sides in this case agree that if her construction of the regulation is clearly erroneous, then the lower court erred as a matter of law in relying on that construction. In our papers, we went to great lengths to explain to the court how Ms. Kotz's interpretation was clearly erroneous by relying on licensing provisions. We still rely on that argument, but upon further review of her affidavit, it appears as if she simplifies the argument even more. She states that at paragraphs 5 and 6, quote, there is only one program. There is no distinct or abbreviated program for experienced educators holding an initial license. In paragraph 6, I have always interpreted the requirements as set forth in section 4.0 of section 1503 pertaining to experienced teachers new to the state of Delaware holding an initial license to mirror those in section 3.0 that pertain to new educators, end quote. This is an unreasonable and absurd interpretation and simply could not have been intended by the enacting body, because it must be presumed that their insertion of that language in there is there for a reason. But according to Ms. Kotz, the language in section 4.4 is nothing but a simple duplicate of what is contained in section 3.0. And if you line the two provisions up and read them, it clearly establishes that they're not identical. There's a clear and distinct provision contained in subsection 4.4 that specifically prohibits a school district from requiring the experienced teacher from participating in more than 60 hours of mentoring activities. Based upon this interpretation and construction of this section of the administrative code, section 4.4 is completely stripped of all meaning and therefore must be considered clearly erroneous. Therefore, the lower court's reliance on her interpretation was an error and must be rejected in favor of an interpretation that renders a reasonable result.
Was there any factual investigation undertaken to see whether 4.4 has actually been interpreted the way it was suggested in this case? In other words, I can't imagine that your client is the only teacher who came into this program with a few years of experience but not the necessary three, who then faced this dilemma.
To my knowledge, he is the only teacher that this has happened to, and I recall something being brought up in one of the depositions that this is the first time that this has become an issue.
Well, then maybe I ought to approach it from a different perspective. If this is the first time that it's ever become an issue, how can Ms. Knox, is it? How can she be talking about, well, I always understood this to mean X if it's never been applied?
Well, perhaps I should clarify. To my knowledge, it's the only time that there has ever been an issue where there has been a lawsuit filed over this provision. To my knowledge,
let's go back to the beginning of how this operates. Somebody's making a determination when someone's new to the district. You're either in the new teacher column or the other column. And I would assume those determinations are being made all the time. And there may be other similarly situated people who didn't like being put in the new teacher column, but they complied and they ultimately were retained. What you're saying is this is the first situation you know of where someone thought they were placed in the wrong category, said they would comply, didn't comply, and then tried to challenge their placement after the fact. Is that right?
As far as I know, and I do want to clarify one thing. Your Honor said you're either in this category or in this category. According to Ms. Kotz, there's only one category. It's this category. What she's saying is Section 4.4, nobody can be in that category, even though it clearly states that somebody must be in the code.
Well, and I guess what I'm trying to find out, again, especially in light of what Justice Holland just said, forgetting anybody who went to litigation, are you saying that either you don't know or nobody looked into whether there are any other teachers who have been treated the way your client was treated. In other words, came in with 2 years of teaching experience at some other place and were told, you get treated like a brand new teacher, you have to go through the 3-year program. Or alternatively, somebody who came in with 2 years experience and was told, oh, you only have to do the 60 hours under 504.4. Do we know whether this issue has ever arisen with any other teacher?
No, Your Honor, I do not know that.
And is that because nobody looked into it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
So moving along, we propose two different alternative theories as to how the court can arrive at a reasonable result if it's found that Ms. Cotts's interpretation was unreasonable. The first is a plain meaning argument, and you know I don't plan to spend a lot of my allotted time explaining to the court what the plain meaning of the term experienced teacher on an initial license means. Because by its very nature, plain meaning argument, it is what it is.
Your opponent says an experienced teacher could be anybody with 6 months' experience or 2 months' experience, and that that it makes sense to quantify it. How do you respond to the argument that the plain meaning of experience must be more than de minimis experience?
Because when the new teacher comes in, they are subject to Section 3.0, which is the full 4 cycle. So once you get past that first year, that's whenever, in our opinion, you would qualify as an experienced teacher. The substitute teachers are not considered educators under the code, and partial year experience would not count towards that experience. It would have to be a year, according to our reading of the code.
But that's a nuance that is not derived from plain meaning, does it?
I think it does if you read the code. It's the plain meaning that would be given to that particular term in light of reading the code itself.
So everything needs to be interpreted in context, including the definition of experienced educator.
It has to be read in terms of the teacher coming in as a new teacher under Section 3.0. We submit that experienced teacher on initial license under Section 4.4 means what it says. It's a teacher who has prior teaching experience and who is working under an initial license. In their answering brief, Red Clay argues that we're urging the court to disregard the Department of Education's interpretation of the term and replace that with a dictionary term. Later they refer to a definition that the lower court gave the term. Based upon what's been produced in the case and our review of the lower court's decision, neither the court nor Ms. Cotts has provided any definition or interpretation of what that term means. In fact, the only conclusion that can be drawn based upon this interpretation is that for purposes of the mentoring provision, an experienced teacher on an initial license is exactly the same as a teacher who is fresh out of college and has no teaching experience whatsoever. Each is subject to the exact same mentoring requirements, those that are set forth under subsection 3.0, the full 3-year, 4-cycle mentoring program. Clearly, this is not how the regulation reads, because subsection 4.4 specifically carves out a special provision for experienced teachers on an initial license and prohibits a school district from requiring such a teacher from engaging in more than 60 hours of mentoring activities. In Mr. Garrison's case, he clearly qualifies as an experienced teacher under the plain meaning of the term. He taught 2 years in the Ohio public school system, 3 additional years teaching at public universities, Ohio State University and Rutgers University. So in all, he had 5 years total experience as a teacher in public institutions. He also taught acting classes in various professional theaters, which would actually give him 20 years of prior teaching experience prior to his employment with Red Clay.
Mr. Wilson, you can continue, but you're in the time you've reserved.
Okay. Thank you. So I would like to switch now to my regulatory argument. If the court decides it can't construe the regulation in terms of plain meaning, we submit that a reasonable result can be found in the provisions of the code as they logically point to a definition of experienced teacher on an initial license as a teacher with 1 year of experience and working on an initial license. First, if you look at the full four-cycle mentoring program, it consists of 60 hours the first year, 30 hours the second year, and 30 hours the third year. And as I've already stated, Section 4.4 mandates that a district can impose no more than 60 hours of mentoring activities on an experienced teacher. Therefore, under our definition, assuming a teacher with 1 year experience comes in from another jurisdiction, he would get credit for that 1 year of experience in the other jurisdiction, and then under the mentoring program would complete 30 hours of mentoring activities respectively in the next 2 years. In total, he would participate in exactly 60 hours of mentoring activities, just as subsection 4.4 prescribes. Taking it a step further, he would also be on equal footing with a teacher who was hired the previous year, again, the teacher fresh out of college or somebody who had never taught before, and who is now in his second year of teaching. In other words, both second-year teachers would be required to engage in the same mentoring program of 30 hours in each of the remaining 2 years for a total of 60 hours. The logical ratio of the limitation of hours under subsection 4.4 for experienced teachers on initial license to the hours of mentoring included in the new educators mentoring program in years 2 and 3 clearly supports our construction of the regulation that a teacher with at least a year of experience is an experienced teacher on an initial license. This concludes my presentation.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Barry Willoughby. I'm representing Red Clay School District. With me is my associate, Adrian Martinelli, who worked on the briefs with us. Your Honor, we look at this case as a very simple case. It's not that different to me than the kind of the clerkship requirements, preceptor requirements we have for attorneys who are being admitted to the Delaware Bar. The Delaware General Assembly, for good reasons, wanted to improve the quality of teachers in our jurisdiction, and they established this mentoring program. At this point, Mr. Garrison does not have a certification to teach in Delaware. He simply cannot teach. He's come forward with a lot of excuses. He's tried to blame other people. He was too busy with his projects, things like that. He sent an email in December of 2006 saying, don't worry about it. I've made a choice. I'm not going to do the mentoring requirements. I'm going to teach the kids. That was a choice he made. And as Your Honor pointed out right from the beginning, he knew what these requirements were going to be. And if he were intended to resist the designation that he had, that was as a new educator, the time for him to resist it was then.
And what would have been his recourse? Is there any procedure in place that he could have not gone down this path?
I'm not aware of any statutory process for him to seek a review in court of the decision by the Department of Education.
Or the school board or anybody else?
If you could pursue internal appeals with the school board, you know, complain as he did to the district personnel. But I don't think other than his grievance process, perhaps within the collective bargaining agreement, there really is no other avenue. He would have to either come into the Chancery Court or use some kind of a writ of mandamus,
something
like that.
So then this is really his recourse. He said, I objected. You overruled my objection. I decided to embark on this course. At the end of the day, you've concluded I didn't comply. And you've terminated me, but I'm now going to assert that I shouldn't have been in that designation in the first place?
I don't see that is his position. I don't think that is a viable position. I think that if he intended to stand that ground, he had to fight that fight then. I don't believe it would be appropriate for him to say, okay, I agree with your interpretation. I'm going to follow through the compliance with the program you set forward. Then at the back end, when he decides he can't do it or hasn't done it, didn't want to do it, now I'm going to reassert that position I had 3 years ago.
There is a process for an extension, right?
There is a process for an extension, and that's for exigent circumstances.
Who oversees that?
Ms. Kotz's affidavit says that the school district applies for that to the Department of Education, and they rule on it. But the reasons for the extension do not cover things like being too busy with other projects at school. There are things like maternity leave, being ill, being out of work for you know, family emergency, things like that.
Well, there's discussion in the briefs about the fact that, you know, for people who decide to coach sports, maybe that's an option, but that here the mentoring and the school plays, which were mandatory for him, were scheduled simultaneously. It's not clear to me in the record why in a situation like his, the mentoring couldn't have been scheduled at a different time. Why was it absolutely necessary that the mentoring be scheduled at a time that conflicted with his school obligations?
You know, the record shows that there were programs on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and it was the option of the teacher to attend either one. The record also shows that Red Clay personnel repeatedly volunteered to cover the play preparation for Mr. Garrison, to do things like that to allow him to comply. And he just chose not to do it because, as he said in his email, he decided teaching the kids was more important than going to these mentoring requirements. So he certainly had the opportunity within the school district to attend these meetings and to do what was expected of. So there is certainly a difference between perhaps coaching.
Who controlled the schedule for the rehearsals?
I believe it would be him. He's the drama teacher, so he'd be the one that controlled that schedule.
Can I ask you what I asked opposing counsel? Is this the only person who's ever been in the Red Clay District who had you know, 1 or 2 years experience somewhere else?
Okay. In Red Clay, again, nor do I know statewide whether that's true or not. The affidavit of Mary Ellen Kotz says that other teachers have failed to comply with the mentoring requirements and have not been certified or unable to teach. The specific question Your Honor has raised was not explored in discovery, and it's not in the record.
So although she says that this is the way she's always interpreted the regulations, it appears that there's no evidence as to support that statement because we don't have people who, Mr. Jones, Mr. Smith, Ms. whatever, you had 1 year, you had 2 year, you all had to go through the 3 year program.
Now, Ms. Kotz wrote the regulations. I think the record shows it was involved in drafting them. I don't believe it follows that because it wasn't explored in discovery that she didn't have prior experience that she was going on.
But we have no record at this point.
And that's the plaintiff's responsibility, Your Honor. I mean, the plaintiff certainly has that obligation to develop that testimony. And
okay,
I guess
ask then, what is her view of what 4.4 means? Because at least the way I see it, 4.4 has no meaning.
It does have meaning, Your Honor. First of all, I think the lower court, Vice Chancellor Lamb, was not necessarily relying on Ms. Kotz's affidavit for the interpretation of the regulation as much as to make sure that it was not a litigation position being asserted for purposes of this case. I think he reviewed
I still want to know what 4.4 means.
4.4 means that if you're an experienced teacher, as defined.
Which means what, less than 3 years or more than 3 years?
Experienced teacher is a term, it's certainly less than 3 years.
Okay, so.
But does not mean, Your Honor, that, excuse me.
I'm trying to be clear on this.
Right.
If you're a new teacher, you get an initial license. If you've taught for 3 years or more, you get a continuing license.
Not necessarily, Your Honor.
It says shall issue a continuing license.
I believe it says may issue in the subsection C of that part that Your Honor is referring to, if they're coming in from another jurisdiction.
Department of Education shall issue a continuing license to a qualified applicant currently licensed as an educator in another jurisdiction who provides evidence of having completed 3 years or more of teaching. You know, basically, the problem I'm having is that under your interpretation, a teacher with less than 3 years' experience gets an initial license and has to go through the three-year mentoring program. A person with more than 3 years' experience gets a continuing license, and I don't know what they have to go through, perhaps nothing. But then we have the in-between, and it would appear that the in-between might be 4.4, which is experienced teachers and specialists new to the state of Delaware who hold initial licenses, therefore they have less than 3 years, shall complete the requirements of on and on for 60 hours. But you say, no, 4.4 doesn't mean that, so tell me what it does mean.
Okay, I will, Your Honor. I apologize for interrupting before. I was looking at section of the code, 14-dollar code 1211C, and that says the Department of Education may issue a continuing license to an applicant or to an educator in another jurisdiction or to someone who holds an expired Delaware license if they've had 3 or more years of experience. So that's doesn't. It's not a mandate. It says
well,
it may.
What about the code, the regulation? Doesn't the regulation say shall issue?
Your Honor, I don't have the reg in front of me. The code, section 1211C, says may, and I have to go back and check what the how that's picked up in the reg.
So okay. Here's if but, I. But tell me what 4.4 means.
Okay, 4.4 means that if you have a teacher who's experienced in another jurisdiction
experience
with less than 3 years, the Department of Education makes a decision as to whether or not that person should go through the full new educator program or the more abbreviated program. And in that, making that determination, they necessarily have to have some kind of discretion. In this case, we have a gentleman who worked 2 years, nearly 20 years ago.
Wait a second. I'm looking at the regulation that says experienced teachers and specialists new to the state of Delaware who hold initial licenses shall complete the requirements of the new educator mentoring program, which shall consist of no more than 60 hours. It doesn't say, we decide who they are.
It doesn't, Aaron. That was the problem with the court had below. The court said that the definition of experienced teacher does not appear in the regulations, and that's why the court relied on the affidavit of Ms. Kotz in terms of defining a new educator as being someone who has less than 3 years' experience. Term experienced teacher is not defined, and that's why we have to go to some kind of external source.
Wait a second. I want to make sure I'm clear here.
Okay.
A teacher with less than 3 years of experience can only get an initial license, right?
Correct.
Okay. But from years 1 to 3, you're still on an initial license, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And 4.4 says experienced teachers who hold initial licenses. So by definition, we're talking about teachers with less than 3 years, right? Because otherwise they'd be holding continuing licenses, right?
Yes.
Okay. So we've got teachers that are 0 to 3, and for those who are experienced teachers, new to Delaware, they are taking a mentoring program that has 60 hours. And does anybody fit in that category?
Yes.
And that would be people who have somewhere between 0 and 3 years of experience, and what else?
I think the Department of Education and the school district have to take a look, case-by-case look at each applicant and decide what level of their experience determines whether they should be in the new educator column or the experienced teacher column.
And is there any record on who has fit in that category in the last several years, what their backgrounds were, you know, how many years they've been teaching and so on?
I'm not aware that the plaintiffs took any discovery on that. I don't know the answer to the question.
And you don't know the answer.
But I do know that the court below said, you know, because of the fact that the term experienced teacher was not defined, it had to look at the regulations as construed by the Department of Education to decide whether or not they properly decided that Mr. Garrison should go through the full program, that is, be a new educator versus being an experienced teacher. And here's how I look at it.
And one more question. Is there anywhere in the regulations that says that somebody is given the responsibility to decide whether a teacher with 0 to 3 years experience falls in one category or the other?
My understanding from Ms. Koch's affidavit is that in conjunction with the school district personnel, she makes that determination.
No, that wasn't my question. My question was, is there anything in the regulations?
I do not believe so, Your Honor.
Okay, so this is just a gap that has been filled ad hoc.
I don't know if it's been filled ad hoc, Your Honor. It's been filled by the interpretation of the person who administers the program. And as the court below said, you know, we're not here to say otherwise. These are not, you know, necessarily the most artfully drawn regulations. But I still think in this circumstance, the application was reasonable and based on the analysis of the court below, the only possible outcome. I mean, if you go back to the concerns Your Honor has about how do we apply this in the real world, how do we have these categories? The first category, new educator. Okay, so if somebody coming right out of college, that's easy. Somebody coming from another jurisdiction who has taught, like Mr. Garrison, maybe
less than three years,
but only 2 years, 20 years ago. Somebody's got to decide, is he going to be considered an experienced teacher, subject to the abbreviated schedule, or is he going to be a new educator? And that's going to be, in the affidavit at least, Ms. Koch's in connection with the school district personnel.
But where would you read in the regulation that 4.4 wouldn't apply to Mr. Garrison? It appears that he completely qualifies under 4.4, but in response to someone's earlier question, you said, well, it's discretionary. It may look that way, but because his 2 years in Ohio were 20 years ago, they really considered him properly to be a new educator. The converse of that is, if you came from Ohio and you had taught consecutively for the two preceding years, 4.4 would apply.
It could apply. I mean, I think that's what I'm saying. And I don't think there's anything in the record that says, you know, more than 1 year experience makes you an experienced teacher. I don't think that's in the regulations. I think the only thing that's
But my question is, how would a reasonable person who is a teacher in another state with some experience, like Mr. Garrison, know that even though he appeared on the face of the regulation to be covered by 4.4, that the district had the discretion to say, no, you're a new educator, you have to start from the beginning, just as someone who got out of college?
I'm not sure there's anything in 4.4 that would say on the face that he's covered by that. I mean, that was what the definitional issue was. Is he a new educator or an experienced teacher?
But we know that new has to start at zero, and experienced, for purposes of getting a continuing license, applies at three. So the range we're talking about for 4.4 is somebody with anything over zero, let's say 1 month's teaching as a substitute teacher,
right,
up to 2.8 months if you go by a 9 month year or something. That would kick over to being 3 years. And this person had, at the very least, if you forget about other educational experience, 2 years as a teacher in another jurisdiction. So you're above the halfway mark from the zero to three. Why wouldn't a reasonable person say, you know, well, that has to apply to me because the next level up for me is somebody who doesn't even have an initial license?
Maybe I can walk through how I understand the regulations to apply and give you examples as how I believe the statute works, and I think that will answer the questions. We have a three-tiered system, and the first tier is the initial license, second tier is the continuing license. Third tier is really advanced. It's not an issue here. Okay, for the first tier, the initial licensing, you have people who are coming right out of college, for example, who meet the educational requirements. Okay, so that's easy. Now we have people coming in from other jurisdictions, who have less than 3 years' experience. The Department of Education and the school district have to decide whether that experience is enough to put them as an experienced teacher, quote-unquote, or a new educator. And I think they have to have discretion to make reasonable judgment calls. And here we have a gentleman who's got 2 years of experience 20 years ago. That's one thing. If it was 2 years of experience coming right in from Pennsylvania, maybe that judgment would have been different. Maybe they would have said, you don't need the entire full four cycles of the mentoring program. They have to make those judgment calls in between. I think that's a reasonable thing for an administrator to do. When you go to the continuing license, the statute does not say that if you have 3 years of experience, you must get a continuing license if you're coming from the jurisdiction. It says you may.
But the regulation says shall.
Well, okay, and that may be the case, Your Honor. But the statute definitely says may. So as I would look at it, let's say you had a teacher coming in from Pennsylvania who had 25 years of experience and coming right in with no gap. The department would certainly be in a position to say, we're going to give that person a continuing license and skip through the initial. Let's take another person.
What was Ms. Cox's definition of an experienced teacher?
She said she's always considered to be someone with less than 3 years. And the, as far as whether the, you know, the placement goes within that, that's a different issue. But, yes, three years is going to be an experienced teacher, is my understanding.
3 years or less than 3 years?
3 years.
So you heard Mr. Wilson argue that if that's her position, no one would ever qualify under 4.4. How would they?
I'm saying he's completely wrong about that. To go back to the example, so you have a teacher who has 3 years or less of experience. They have 2 years of experience.
Let's pick three. Maybe I can understand.
Okay,
better.
Let's pick three. They
come in from Ohio. For the last 3 years in a row, they've been teaching in Ohio. What happens to them?
At that point, then, the department has to make a decision. Is that because they've got 3 years now, they may issue a continuing license to that person if they think that there's a sufficient level of experience there. Or they could say, we're giving you an initial license, but you have enough experience that you're going to fit within this experienced teacher slot to reduce 60 hours. But they're not compelled, but the middle ground certainly does exist, and there has to be some discretion for the department to administer this. And let's say the 3 years.
But under your scenario, they can also say, you're a new educator. You're starting from scratch. We don't like your experience.
And I think that could be the case, Your Honor. Let's take an example. Let's say that the teacher had 3 years' experience 25 years ago and nothing in between.
No, but my hypothetical is somebody who taught for the last 3 years.
Right.
Could they say to that person, do they have the discretion to say to that person, you are a new educator?
I think it would depend on a variety of factors. I believe it would depend on the experience. If it's, you're saying you're, in your hypothetical, it's immediately preceding the application. Okay, but maybe the person is trying to change from teaching the arts to English. I mean, any number of factors. Maybe it's from another jurisdiction that the school district or the Delaware officials don't necessarily think the educational level is as high as it should be. Any number of those factors, I think they have to have the discretion to make that kind of a call. The middle ground certainly exists, though, to take the hypothetical that we talked about. Let's say the teacher had 3 years experience 25 years ago. When they go to apply this.
Let's forget about the hypotheticals for a moment. The affidavit says that, according to Ms. Knox, is it Knox?
Kotz, K-O-T-Z, I believe.
I'm sorry, Ms. Kotz. In order to be an experienced teacher, you need 3 years, right?
Yes.
Based upon that statement, nobody could qualify under 4.4. Isn't that true?
No, Your Honor, it's not true.
Tell me how, you need 3 years to be experienced, do you qualify under 4.4 when 3 years will get you a continuing license?
Your Honor, I think Your Honor has pointed out there's a difference between the regulations and the Delaware Code. The Delaware Code section says very plainly that the department may issue, is not required to issue, a continuing license to a teacher with 3 years' experience. And to me, that comes back to this discretion question.
So wait a second. So you're saying that as far as Ms. Kotz is concerned, the regulation 4.4 applies to teachers who have 3 or more years of experience who may somehow hold initial licenses because they haven't been given a continuing license, notwithstanding the fact that the regulation says that they have to get one?
Well, the regulation, again, is in conflict with the code, apparently. But to the question of does that middle ground exist, the answer is purely yes.
Okay, thank you.
And I believe, and again, Your Honor, I'm not trying to be argumentative about it, but I think that you're looking at discretion of officials who are in the role of making these decisions. I think they have to have some authority to decide whether or not the experience is remote in time to look at the quality of that experience, the circumstances, to decide where they're going to categorize these people.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you look at Ms. Kotz's affidavit, nowhere does she say that a teacher with more than 3 years of experience is an experienced teacher. What she says is that anybody on an initial license has to go through the whole four-cycle, three-year program. That's what she says in her affidavit if you look at it.
What paragraph is that, do you know?
It's in her second affidavit, paragraph 5. There is only one program. There is no distinct or abbreviated program for experienced educators holding an initial license. She doesn't say anything about years of experience.
So what you're saying is that she effectively says that there's nobody in the category of 4.4.
Yes. And that's why in my portion of your argument, I didn't readdress the whole thing of the 3 year line of demarcation, because when I went through and looked at it again, she simply states initial license, 4 cycles, 3 years, that's it. Okay. And I realize I'm running out of time here, but another issue I wanted to just bring to your attention is Mr. Willoughby said that Mr. Garrison said, I'm not going to do the mentoring. He never said that. He was perfectly willing to go through the mentoring. The first 2 years, they worked with him on his schedule. Because he had all these extra duties, they worked with him, let him make up classes and stuff, and then the third year, they shut him down. They said, we're not going to let you make up any of these things. And he never found this out until late in the year after it was too late to do anything about it.
But there's an opportunity to request an extension, right?
Yes.
And did he do that?
Well, it was, according to Ms. Kotz, the district has to make that request. At his hearing with Dr. Andrzejewski, they requested that the district make that request. However, in the Delaware Code, as was pointed out in Vice Chancellor Lamb's opinion, it says that the educator must make the request. And that's another issue with Ms. Kotz's affidavit.
As a matter of law, then, he could have made a request?
Yes, he could have, but he was under the impression that, and I'm on red, may I finish responding?
Yes.
He was under the impression, based upon what he was told, that the district had to make the request. Therefore, he didn't know that he was required to make the request, and the district did not make the request for him.
Thank you. Thank you both. The court will take this matter under advisement, and we'll also take a brief recess.
Please rise.